Welcome to another episode of The Impolite Psychologist. So today I wanted to talk about the idea of victims and victimhood. This comes up a lot in our society, and it certainly does come up in therapy quite a bit. Now, in order for there to be victims, there have to be villains. And one of the things that sort of popped up for me is there was a time when Bill Cosby was a guy who was basically America's dad. He worked on children's shows like Sesame Street. To many of us, Bill Cosby was Dr. Huxtable on The Cosby Show. He was a prominent physician who led his family. He was very funny. He was good with kids on the TV show. Now, after that, Bill Cosby hosted a TV show called Kids Say the Darndest Things. And it was basically him talking to little kids and listening to their silly answers to questions that he had about them. And he was a father figure to many of us in the, I guess it was 80s and 90s. And he was so good with people and particularly children that all these years later, news coming out about him drugging and raping women is just so shocking and unbelievable, knowing who we thought he was before this. And he went from being America's dad to being a villain with victims all around him. And this was so shocking to many of us. And I think some people had such a difficult time believing this that there was sort of this idea that it was all a conspiracy and people are just trying to make money off of him and these victims are lying and it's not possible. But one after another came out, and you kind of have to believe that it's real and it's awful. And we never want to get to this place of blaming the victim. Like when a woman is date raped, we don't ask her, what were you wearing then? Like somehow it's the victim's fault. But I wanted to talk about all of this stuff, about what is a victim, because I think it's quite complicated and our beliefs are complicated about this. Now, I've mentioned this book before. There's an excellent book called The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker. It's based on the idea that we have instincts inside of us, like fear, that were originally developed in human beings in order for us to survive threats. And as our lives have gotten easier and we have lived in our communities and we don't have to think about survival so much and threats so much as we once did when we lived in caves and there were big animals, that a lot of times when we do have fear, we second guess ourselves and we often say to ourselves, oh, I'm just jumping to conclusions. Oh, I'm being paranoid. I shouldn't be thinking that way. I should give this other person who seems scary the benefit of the doubt. All of these things sort of run through our heads instead of just feeling the fear and doing something about it. Like, I'm afraid I'm going to remove myself from the situation. And his point is that if the skin's crawling on the back of your neck and you're feeling uneasy about a person, you probably should find a way to get out of there because you might become the victim of a crime. And he has lots of stories like that in his book where people just didn't listen to that inner voice and ended up becoming victims. Now, something that has recently come up for me, I have heard from numerous people that they don't understand why something of value has gotten stolen from their car when they left it in the front seat or within eyeshot of passerbys. I've heard of people leaving cash on their console in the middle of their car, or leaving a purse on a seat, or leaving jewelry where it could be seen by somebody passing by. And then what ends up happening is those items get stolen, somebody sees it, smashes the window, and those items get stolen. And then people are shocked by becoming a victim of a crime. And they don't understand why their stuff got stolen in their car, got broken into. And I don't understand the shock, but I guess the shock is that people are not thieves. My things are safe because the community is a good community, or the street is a good street, and people don't steal that often, etc., etc. Whatever the thing is that people tell themselves that inevitably ends up creating victims of them. And if you have ever talked to police officers about difficult calls that they have been called to, they will often say that domestic violence situations are very bad because they often wind up violent and things are sort of unpredictable when people are in a rage. But what's interesting about this is that often someone will be a victim of domestic violence. There will be yelling and noises, and a neighbor will call the police, and the police will show up, see the perpetrator, see the victim, and try to haul off the perpetrator, and then the victim gets upset with the police. This happens so often that a law got created, at least where I live, in which the perpetrator must be taken away, even if the victim protests. And that is sort of interesting in and of itself. Perhaps it's about being victimized even further after police involvement, but I think a lot of times it's, oh, we were just fighting and it's not that serious. The police shouldn't be involved, even though I've got two black eyes and everything in our house is broken. But it's sort of an interesting situation because this sort of shows us the complications of being a victim and what that actually means psychologically. Now, in my practice, even before I was in private practice and I worked for agencies, I would often meet people, particularly women, who had a history of sexual abuse that happened when they were very young. And as I talked to women like this, sometimes I would hear these other stories that happened later. First, I was a victim of sexual abuse as a child. Then I was date raped later. Then I was grabbed off the street and violently raped then. And An outsider looking in to this might say, A, either that person is lying, or B, what crappy luck this one woman has had in her life. She has just been punished or unlucky, something to that effect. But that's actually not the case. What it is that when a child has experienced sexual abuse, their concept of who is a trustworthy adult gets really messed up. Because as little children, we look to our caregivers as the people who are good and will protect us and care for us and love us and have all the answers. And when our caregivers or a trusted adult ends up violating our trust, it becomes confusing about who and what situation is in fact trustworthy. If the good adults, the good people who are supposed to be taking care of you do something that feels awful, perhaps the problem is with you, or perhaps you don't understand what it is to trust people, and everything becomes confusing. And so fast forward to later years, maybe we're talking about the teen years, maybe we're talking about adulthood, and that confusion about people who are trustworthy or situations that are trustworthy continues. There becomes a lot of confusion around that. And what happens is people who have confusion around trust don't have that fear instinct all sorted out. So they end up taking risks. And they don't trust the fear instinct. And so they end up being in situations with bad people because they don't trust their instincts about whether this person is trustworthy or not, even if it's obvious that that person is not. They will still question that feeling of uneasiness, or maybe they don't even have a feeling of uneasiness. And so they end up with people and situations that are untrustworthy, and the same thing ends up happening again, and they become victims again. And the only way to recover from that is to teach them how to trust their instincts and to notice their instincts and to feel their instincts and to avoid risky situations. And it's strange, but I do have to have those conversations with people who are adults. And so we see victimhood happening in other ways as well. I will often see people, and we see this in mental health quite often, where, okay, maybe the person I'm seeing is a little bit depressed, but whenever they get together with friends or family, they really, really play up and dramatize their depression like it's a lot more severe than it actually is. Or we see this with physical problems, right? Somebody might have an old injury and they might exaggerate how bad that injury is. And in either one of these situations, a lot of times what it is that there's so much good stuff that comes from being a victim. If you are a person with a mental health issue in your family or amongst your friend group, and people know about it. And then when you talk about that problem, or you talk about your injury or your illness or whatever it is, all your friends and family come running and they become concerned about you and they check in with you more often than they normally would. And they want to listen to you and they want to give you attention. Why wouldn't you continue to talk about your issues and exaggerate your issues when so many wonderful things come from that? And people have told me about this in therapy. They have told me about how, I've been seeing you and I feel like I'm doing better, but I was feeling suicidal for a few minutes the other day, and so I kind of mentioned that to the people around me, and then all of a sudden they were at my house and they were worried about me, and it felt kind of good that they were asking me all these questions and worried about me. And there is sort of positive reinforcement for remaining sick or mentally ill, because you as the victim get a lot of love and attention, and that feels good. And we've seen it in other ways too. When we talk about the concept of narcissism, and there are different types of narcissists, I think sometimes we have, as a society, a view of a narcissist being somebody with an inflated ego, and they brag about their accomplishments, and they might show off with their stuff. And that's sort of how we generally think of narcissists. But underneath that, the psychology underneath all of that is a feeling that someone isn't good enough. And usually they were victims to some degree. Something happened traumatically in their life at an earlier time, and this became the coping skill. But even if you talk to somebody who's this kind of narcissist, who has the big ego and wants people to praise them and like them, there's often an undertone of how people are against them in some way. Somebody is jealous of them. Somebody doesn't want them to do well. Somebody wants to see their demise. Somebody doesn't appreciate them for all the qualities that they have. There's still a sense of victimhood underneath it all, no matter how good or confident a narcissist will look. Now, the other type of narcissist that you might not see as easily is the martyr type. These are the people who are so self-sacrificing. I worked 12 hours even though I was supposed to work 4 because I knew how much my boss needed me. Or I decided to help this person and I put myself aside because it was so important for me to help and be there for someone less fortunate or struggling. And what this is, there's this constant discussion of self-sacrifice while seeming quite humble, that has to do with managing other people's impression. And the idea of the martyr type of narcissism is that they are managing the impressions of other people around them, much the same way that somebody with a big ego would. Instead of trying to show off, trying to show self-sacrifice so that people will kind of see them as a victim, feel sorry, think of them as a wonderful, good person who puts others before themselves and that kind of thing. And we don't often see that, detect it, or pick up on it really that easily, because people with this type of narcissism are often actually doing good things. And how do you separate out, you know, who's genuinely kind-hearted versus somebody who really needs people to think that they are a saint or a good person? And I think in general, there is kind of a victim mentality that is in our society today. I, of course, have my antenna up for mental health issues, and I often see people talking about all the problems and limitations they have because of their mental health problem. And there are a lot of people on social media who talk about their mental health issues constantly, and they want people to hear about their mental health issues, and in many ways use it as an excuse for why they can't do something. I can't work a full-time job because I suffer from anxiety. It is difficult for me to go to this event that I have to go to that is an obligation for my work because I have social anxiety, or whatever the thing is that people are often using mental health, their mental health issues, to create the idea that they are victims instead of actually doing something about it. I would bet that there are a lot more people complaining and using mental health as an excuse than there are people who are getting on social media and are talking about interventions that they are receiving because they've decided that they need to work on their mental health. And I think that in general, our society enjoys victimhood a little too much right now. That there is always a villain and there is always a victim. In our society, where people are constantly fighting about racial relations or gender issues or issues with sexuality, it's not a disagreement between two equals. It is often, I am victim, you are villain or perpetrator. And although that is true, that does happen, there are victims and perpetrators. There are homophobic and transphobic and racist people all over the place. It has gotten to another level where it seems to me like when two people just disagree for whatever reason, someone gets painted as a villain and someone gets painted as a victim. And I think we have to be more careful about separating out when two equals are simply disagreeing and that there is no victim or villain. And there's a great quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson that says, "Let me never fall into the vulgar mistake of dreaming that I am persecuted whenever I am contradicted." And I think that would be an excellent way for us to all self-examine in going forward. And understanding that victimhood is complicated and people have reasons to be victims in our society, And often it has to do with some unmet need. They are trying to gain something, which is understandable. Trying to get your needs met is an understandable human behavior. And sometimes being a victim helps you to do that. But I think we do need to consider where it's real and where it's not real. And so as you go through your life and think about yourself, and think about ways that you maybe are exaggerating problems just to get a little more support or love or attention, consider finding another way to ask for those things. Be well, and thank you for listening.